This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio. OWL Radio is a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. You can ask your Alexa device to enable and play OWL Radio. Welcome, I am Martha Atee. Today's program is being recorded on January 14, 2023. Our first article, 7 Reasons to Strengthen Your Muscles. This article was written in November 2022, and it is from the Nutrition Action Newsletter, which is published by the Center for Science in the Public Interest. It's no secret that moving your body helps keep it healthy. But if you're like most people, you walk right past the dumbbells as you head to the treadmill at the gym. Here's why it's time to add some push-ups, planks, and squats to your fitness routine. This article was written by Caitlin Dow for the Nutrition Action Newsletter. The first reason. Your muscles ain't what they were in your 20s. Brad Schoenfeld, professor of exercise science at Lehman College in New York, says, "There's a use it or lose it principle with muscles. That's true at any age, but the process speeds up as the year goes by. There's an age-related loss of muscle mass that occurs at about 0.5% per year, starting in our 30s. Then it accelerates once you get into your 50s. Gary Hunter, professor emeritus at the Department of Nutrition Science at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, says, "By the time you're 70, you may have lost 40%, if not more, of your muscle mass. And it's not just muscle mass." Mark Peterson, associate professor of physical medicine and rehab at the University of Michigan, says, "The actual composition of the muscles look dramatically different in an older versus younger person. The muscle fibers get smaller, the muscle is less able to contract, and it gets infiltrated with fat." The bad news is, you will lose some muscle even if you've been training all your life. The better news is you can build appreciable muscle at any age. A 70-year-old who strength trains seriously can have more muscle than in their 20s if they were sedentary. Number 2. Muscle strength is not the same as muscle size. Mark Peterson, associate professor of physical medicine and rehab at the University of Michigan, says muscle size and strength are obviously highly correlated. Muscle strength is dependent on the size of the muscle, but also on how the nervous system interacts with the muscle. Strength training boosts both. Interestingly, the strength adaptations that take place in the first couple of months of strength training are primarily neuromuscular. That's why you may notice yourself getting stronger, even if your muscles don't look bigger when you first start. Peterson continues, "When you don't use your muscles, they become weaker, both from a nervous system standpoint and at the muscle level. But the loss of muscle happens much more slowly than the nervous system deconditioning. That's why people lose strength 2 to 5 times faster when they lose muscle mass as they age." Number 3. Strength can keep you self-sufficient. Peterson says, "If you don't preserve strength, it's harder for you to ambulate, to move your body through space, or walk up stairs or stand up from a chair. The beauty of doing strength training is that it improves balance and gait, and your ability to squat down and pick up a box from Amazon. You're not going to get that from doing repetitive aerobic exercise like walking or biking. Peterson adds, I don't want to oversell strength training over aerobic. Aerobic exercise is critical for cardiovascular and cognitive health. I'm a firm believer in daily aerobic exercise, but it shouldn't come at the cost of strength training. What's more, strength training can make gardening, cleaning the house, walking the dog, or riding a bike easier. Professor Hunter adds, in our studies in which we have older people doing strength training, we find that not only do strength and muscle mass increase, but people also increase their participation in physical activity. And that leads to other benefits. You become more economical at movement. As you move more, you'll have a lower heart rate and breathe easier. And that translates into more ease and enjoyment of activity. So strength training has several impacts on your likelihood of being active. Number 4, strength can prevent falls. Strength training can help people avoid falls and fractures. Roughly 1 in 3 women and 1 in 5 women over age 50 will have a fracture due to osteoporosis in their lifetime. Once someone falls and breaks a hip, they become completely immobile until it heals. An older adult who has suffered a hip fracture is 3 to 4 times likely to die within a year than an older adult who hasn't. Aerobic training is not going to do much for preventing falls and fractures. You need to increase your strength and power, which is your ability to apply strength over a short period of time, like catching yourself if you start to fall. And that's done through strength training. To minimize your fall risk, try activities that improve not just your strength, but your balance and coordination. Some good options: Tai Chi, yoga, dancing, or even hiking. Unlike walking on a treadmill or sidewalk, hiking strengthens your ankles, challenges your balance, and helps build muscle as you move up and down over the terrain. Number 5, work your muscles to lower your blood sugar. Muscle is more than just for movement. One of the biggest things that is lost on people is that muscle is metabolically active, says Dr. Peterson. Muscle is the largest organ in the body, and it stores and consumes more glucose or blood sugar than any other tissue. It is essentially a giant sink for glucose. Landmark clinical trials in patients with type 2 diabetes have shown that strength training, even without aerobic exercise, can improve blood sugar, says Peterson. For example, researchers randomly assigned 251 Canadian adults with type 2 diabetes to do aerobic training, strength training, both, or nothing for 22 weeks. Strength training by itself lowered hemoglobin A1C, which is a long-term measure of blood sugar, compared to those who did neither. Aerobic exercise also lowered hemoglobin A1C. But those who did both strength and aerobic training fared the best. Their drop in hemoglobin A1C was twice as great as those who did only one activity. That could be because they were twice as active. And in a study of 88 people with overweight and obesity but not diabetes, insulin sensitivity, the ability of the body's insulin to move sugar out of the blood and into the cells improved in those who did 3 days of strength training and walked 12 miles a week at a brisk pace for 8 months. Number 6. Pumping iron may help you live longer. Jess Gorzelitz, assistant professor of health and human physiology at the University of Iowa, says, "We wanted to know if weightlifting alone or in combination with aerobic exercise influences one's risk of death. So we asked a group of roughly 100,000 older adults about their lifestyle. Then we followed them for about 10 years. Those who hit the U.S. physical activity guidelines for aerobic activity, which is 150 minutes of moderate or 75 minutes of vigorous activity a week, were nearly a third less likely to die over those 10 years. That's no surprise, since aerobic activity improves cardiovascular fitness and is linked to a lower risk of several cancers." Gorzelitz continues, "But we also found that weightlifting, independent of aerobic activity, was linked to a 10 to 20% lower risk of dying. So if you want to get more bang for your buck, get your heart and your muscles pumping. Those who weightlifted one or two times per week and met the guidelines of aerobic activity had a 41% lower risk of dying over a decade," Gorzelitz said. What if you're not interested in pumping iron? That is not your only option. In a recent study that followed roughly 416,000 people for up to 18 years, those who did muscle strengthening had an 11% lower risk of dying. Some of them used weights, but others stressed their muscles with resistant bands or even their own body weight when they did push-ups, lunges, or squats. Why might strengthening your muscles keep you alive longer? Gorzelitz says, "We don't know for sure. Presumably, our participants were working hard enough to build lean muscle mass and strength. And that helps maintain function and independence and lowers the risk of debilitating falls. Socializing may also have helped." Gorzelitz said, "Most people who weightlift are probably going to a gym. Maybe that reduced their isolation, which is also linked to an increased risk of mortality." A recent study on nearly 1,300 people by the University of Michigan's Mark Peterson may also shed some light. He says, "We looked at grip strength, which is a proxy for total body strength. Older folks with higher grip strength had a younger biological age based on a marker in their DNA than their chronological age. And a weak 70-year-old's biological age looked more like an 80-year-old's," he adds. "People have said for a long time that exercise makes you younger without anything to back it up. We're showing for the first time some biological mechanisms that may explain why. But this is the first study, so we have a lot more to learn." Gorzelitz and Peterson's studies can't prove that being stronger helps lengthen your life or makes you biologically younger. illness, or something else about inactive people could explain their shorter lifespan. Even so, there is no downside to toning your muscles. And finally, number 7, the world is your strength training oyster. Are you not sure where to start on your muscle building journey? If you're unfamiliar with correct technique, your best bet is to work with a qualified trainer until you get comfortable. Schoenfeld says the most important thing at the beginning is doing enough repetitions. It's a matter of getting the movement patterns ingrained in your subconscious, and that requires repetition. To prevent injury, start with lighter weights. Pick a weight where you can do at least 10, but not more than 15 repetitions, and then do 2 or 3 sets of 10 or 15 reps. Once you've gotten the hang of it, push yourself by bumping up the weight to get stronger. The physical activity guidelines recommend that adults train all the major muscle groups at least twice a week. It can be challenging to hit all the muscle groups in one session, so you may need to do some muscle strengthening 3 to 4 days a week. But don't let that dissuade you from starting. Gorzelit says, one of our most consistent findings is that while more is better, some is better than none. The worst group to be in is the one that does no activity. If time is an issue, you can see very good results with a 30-minute session of strength training twice a week. Or you can try small bouts of strength snacks throughout the day. That really hasn't been researched, Schoenfeld admits, but assuming you're putting in as much effort as you would if you did it all at once, I can think of no reason why that wouldn't work. And here's more good news. Whether you like to do fewer reps with heavier weights or more reps with lighter weights, you can build muscle mass and strength. The results are virtually identical for muscle mass. That's assuming that in both cases you challenge the muscle, putting in a level of effort that approaches what's called muscle failure. That's when you just can't lift the weight even one more time. But you'll build more strength with heavier loads. You can make good strength gains with lighter loads, I'll bet not quite as much as with heavier weights. What if you get muscle soreness? Don't worry, it's an indicator that you challenge the muscles in a novel fashion. But soreness is certainly not a prerequisite for getting results. If your muscles do get sore, don't give up. Soreness typically subsides after a few weeks of strength training. And whatever route you take to build muscle, don't let it get boring. Try Pilates, lift weights, use resistant bands, join a gym, or work out at home using an app or online videos. You've got options. And there's a list of videos you can try or apps. One is called HasFit, that's HASFIT. Another app is called Fitness Blender. And of course, Silver Sneakers. And if you can afford it, work with a personal trainer to learn proper form and technique when you're getting started. And you're listening to the Healthy Living Podcast. Our next article is from the New York Times Health section, How to Spare Yourself from Shoulder Pain. This article is from December 29, 2022, written by Cindy Kuzma. Over hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, the human shoulder has undergone dramatic changes to make it more versatile, allowing our arms to reach over our heads, behind our backs, and swing in full circles. But it also became much more prone to injury. At any given moment, an estimated 1 in 4 people struggle with shoulder pain. For some, an ache might only mildly interfere with their golf game. Others, however, may struggle to get dressed in the morning. Dr. Drew Lansdowne, an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at the University of California, San Francisco, says the other big thing people complain about with the shoulder is pain at night. It keeps you from sleep because you can't find a comfortable position. You can't lie on that side. You can't lie on the other side. While some injuries happen suddenly and traumatically, damage usually occurs over time. The ball and socket joint of the shoulder is secured by four muscles and tendons of the rotator cuff, which can become irritated, torn, or overstretched. The labrum, a cup of cartilage surrounding them, may also tear. Small fluid-filled sacs called the bursa, which normally cushions the joint, may instead swell and then ache. Often you have more than one problem at a time, and it may not be clear exactly what's causing your pain, says physical therapist Lori Michener from the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. Athletes who frequently use their arms overhead, including baseball pitchers, swimmers, and tennis players, face greater shoulder risks, as do workers whose jobs involve heavy loads or awkward arm positions, such as truck drivers and dental hygienists. Dislocating your shoulder once also raises the odds that it will happen again. Genetics may also play a role, and with age, the odds of a rotator cuff tear and arthritis in the shoulders rise for everyone. There are steps you can take to safeguard the shoulder. Strong muscles shore up your shoulders. Strengthening the muscles surrounding your shoulder increases its resilience, warding off pain and injury, says Benham Liagat, a specialist in sports physiotherapy and assistant professor at the University of Southern Denmark. Work both the big muscles in your upper back and chest and the smaller stabilizing muscles surrounding your shoulder and scapula, the shelf on which your shoulder rests. Exercise programs such as a classic group called the Throwers 10, designed to bolster the joint in high-risk overhead athletes, have been shown to significantly reduce shoulder injury risk by as much as half if they are done 2 to 3 times per week. These exercises require a light dumbbell and a resistance band. Such a program should be part of regular maintenance for even recreational overhead athletes, said Ayuna Felix, a physical therapist and owner of Optimal Performance based in New York. She plays tennis regularly and dedicates 2 days a week to shoulder conditioning. If you're not regularly involved in overhead activities, a few key exercises can keep shoulders healthy as you age. She recommends 3, the scapular rows, the shoulder extensions with the band, as well as a scapular retraction, a simple movement that strengthens the stabilizing muscles. To do that, you lie face down, arms by your side, and palms facing the floor. You pull your shoulder blades back and down as you lift your arms to the level of your hips. Hold for a couple of seconds and then slowly release. Before you attempt an overhead sport or weightlifting move, or as a general gauge of how well your shoulder is functioning, try a simple 3-part test for your shoulder mobility. First, stand in front of a wall with your toes touching it, and see if you can raise one arm at a time over your head to touch the wall in front of you with your flat palm. Then bring your hand down to touch the back of your head, keeping your elbow out to the side. Then bring your arm back down to your side, Then reach up behind your back, aiming to touch the opposite shoulder blade with the back of your hand. Do that with the other arm. If you have trouble doing these movements by reaching the end positions, you could benefit from more mobility. To improve your range of motion, perform those same until you feel a stretch, then hold it for 30 seconds to a minute. Do this 3 to 5 times a week. Then monitor your progress. If your mobility doesn't improve, you might need to hold the stretches longer and repeat them more frequently. After a couple of weeks, if your mobility is still limited or you have pain, you should probably check with a physical therapist or other medical professional. You should work your lower body too. Much of the power for a pitch, serve, or an overhead movement comes from the ground up. The weaker your legs and core, the more force your shoulder must produce, increasing stress on that joint. In a study published earlier this year, minor league pitchers with one hip weaker than the other had a greater risk of injuries in the shoulder and elbows of their throwing arms. To build balanced lower body strength and stability, movements like lunges and squats are recommended. Planks are good too. The extended contraction of your core and legs improves muscular endurance. Then harness the power of your whole body when using your arms over your head. For instance, when stowing a carry-on bag on a plane's overhead bend your knees and lift with your legs instead of just muscling it with your shoulders. Even if you're diligent about strengthening and stretching, you could still trigger pain or cause damage if you jump into a new shoulder straining activity too quickly. Some people think, "Oh, I played back in high school. I can pick up a ball and throw like I used to." Your muscles and tendons need time to build the specific strength and control required for any shoulder straining movements. Even athletes in their prime risk injuries like this. To keep an eye on how much you're stressing your shoulders, consider what scientists call the acute to chronic workload ratio. Tally the average weekly amount of any given activity, say laps of swimming or hours of tennis, that you've logged in over the last 4 weeks. That's your chronic workload. Divide that by what you're doing this week, the acute workload. Some estimates suggest when that number rises higher than 1.5, meaning you've done 50% more this week compared to your average for the previous months, your odds of injury increase soon after. Often minor inflammation or irritation in the shoulder joint resolves within a few days. Ice and, of course, anti-inflammatories may help. Once the pain subsides, consider whether your routines might benefit from rebalancing the strain on the front and back of your shoulders. For instance, if you're a climber who's always pulling yourself up a wall, or a yogi who's always pushing off against the floor, try doing some movements in the opposite direction. Say, adding push-ups for climbers or rows if you're doing yoga. If pain lingers or if it's accompanied by weakness, clicking sensations, or feeling of the joints shifting or slipping, see a medical professional. And we've come to the end of the Healthy Living Podcast. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. I'm Martha Atee. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye from Al Radio.